That's right, hour number two, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. How's it going? Chase McCabe live at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena as the Preds get ready to take on the Carolina Hurricanes later on this evening in the final home game of the preseason. They'll have one more against the Hurricanes Friday night in Raleigh. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick will be along in just a few minutes. Max Herz back at the studio, and a lot of fun Preds events going on this week. The game tonight, but you can also come out to the second annual Preds Fest coming up this Sunday, September 29th, from 2 to 6. There will be Preds players appearances, live entertainment, a used equipment sale, and fun for the whole family. Stop by our tent to win some awesome prizes and game gear. So come out and see us and the Preds out at the Preds Fest. Very cool thing that they started last year, and I know when Sean Henry was on the show, he said that, you know, they want to build it and turn it into a multi-day festival. They hope to have some big announcements. So I know there's going to be a lot to do on Sunday here with the Preds Fest. So, and again, the game tonight, we'll have coverage starting at 6 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hit a lot of different things with Joe Rexroad from The Athletic in that last segment. And we were talking about the Titans and things that you've heard on this show and other shows in the past few weeks, coming off a couple of bad losses by this team, of games they could have won. I'm not going to say should, even though I felt like they should have beaten the Colts. They had control of that game. They gave it away. They should have had a better showing against Jacksonville. But there are clearly some things wrong with this team that they're going to have to address, and they're going to have to do it in short order. Nobody expects them to win the Super Bowl in the first 3 weeks of the season. I thought it was interesting that John Fox from ESPN joined the morning show and said, listen, you don't win or lose a game in the first quarter, just like you don't do that in a season. I get that. But at the same time, when you want to spout off a phrase going from good to great, when you're going into a second-year head coach after you fired somebody that took you to the playoffs and won a playoff game, and yet you're starting off 1-2, it's very hard for me to go, all right, well, I'm going to feel fine. I'm going to be good with everything, especially when I'm seeing the same mistakes out of the quarterback, when I'm seeing the lack of execution by the offense. The defense still looks pretty good. I feel good about the defense, even though they did not register a sack last week against Jacksonville. That troubled me some. But the defense, they have to get to a point where they can cover up for some of the mistakes that Marcus Mariota and the offense are making, and I just don't know if they're quite there yet. Now, they have an opportunity this weekend in Atlanta. I don't think the Falcons are very good. They're having their struggles as well. You have to take advantage of those opportunities. Go in there and get a win. I'm not going to say steal a win, because they should win this, or they should be in a position to win this game, I should say. Go in there, and you're 2-2 without Taylor Lewan. I think that that's something that they would not feel great about, but you definitely feel better than 1-3. So I think it's a huge opportunity for the Tennessee Titans to turn this around, because I'm not saying the schedule necessarily gets easier for them, because I don't believe there is such a thing as an easy schedule in the NFL, but they're going to have their left tackle back, which isn't going to fix all their problems, but they'll have him, so that'll help. And then you have Buffalo, which I don't know. You heard us talking yesterday. Is Buffalo for real? I don't know if Buffalo is for real or not. We're going to find out. We're going to find out this weekend, because they play New England. But then they have the Titans in week 5. That'll be a home game. So if you're 2-2 going into that one, see what you do there. You're on the road at Denver. That's very winnable for them. This thing can all turn around. It's just a matter of, can they fix some of the things that have been plaguing them over the course of the first couple of games? That's what I have to see out of this football team, and it all starts with the quarterback. He's been so inconsistent throughout his career. Now, you go and you look at the numbers, and you'll go, Chase, I mean, he hadn't thrown an interception. You know, he's taking care of the football. I mean, he's had a couple of games over 300 yards passing. They're 1-2. And he's still overthrowing some receivers. He's still not making some throws that at this point in year 5 he should be making. And oh, by the way, the team is showing that they're still like, hey, I don't know, because they haven't signed him to a long-term deal. So these are questions that, again, you're not necessarily going to answer in the first 3 weeks. You're going to sit there and you're going to be disappointed because your team's 1-2. But now as you go to Atlanta, you have an opportunity to change things and start to rewrite the narrative, as we like to say. And that's what they have to try and do starting this weekend with the Atlanta Falcons. Willie Donick is getting all set here after morning skate as he joins the show. Willie, welcome in.
Hello, Chase.
How was everything with morning skate?
Great. It's exciting. We got the gang back together. We got a little telecast tonight, so we went through our regular game day routine. I think there's a lot of excitement about getting closer to the start of the season. This will be closer to the lineup you'll see on opening night. There are a couple of guys that I think would be in there otherwise that still are not. They're going to allow the bubble players, if you will, to try to play for those last couple of spots and maybe allow a couple guys who are banged up. Colton Sissons, for example, did not play in the third period of the game on Saturday night. And so without knowing any specifics, it looks like he's going to be held out. He's still on the ice skating right now, so I think they're going to hold him out for precautionary reasons. He looks fine, but
he was in the white jersey yesterday.
He was in the white jersey at practice yesterday, so you'll see a lot of familiar faces. But I think tonight, I think we're all going to be focusing on those last couple of roster spots to see how they look as a couple of guys try to win the last job or two there.
That's going to be fun to see because we talked to Daniel Carr yesterday that somebody that is fighting for one of those spots. We know some names, and Mika Salamaki's been here the last few years, and Freddie Gaudreau, Matt Irwin, Yannick Weber, Steven Santini joins the team. I mean, those are guys that are towards the bottom of the roster that are fighting for those spots because they have three more cuts to make, and I don't envy Peter Laviolette and David Poile for having to do those because, as we've talked about on this show, I mean, this is the deepest the team's been in a while. They have replenished the depth for sure on that team, and there's going to be some good players that unfortunately aren't going to make it just because of numbers.
At least not at the start of the season.
Yep.
I think the question would be when they make those cuts, do they lose any of those players when they pass through waivers? So they'll probably keep their fingers crossed that they don't. Maybe they lose one. But the good thing is if they don't lose any of them, then they still have those players at their disposal. We've talked about some stories before of guys who didn't make the opening night roster but end up being a big part of the team. Rocco Grimaldi was not on the opening day roster last year. Turned out to be a very important player. Austin Watson a couple years ago, the same thing happened.
Yep.
So with that in mind, we'll see where it goes. But I'll tell you one, a couple of guys to watch tonight. We talked to Daniel Carr yesterday on the show. I think tonight you're going to see him get a very good look. And I think it's one of those things where, hey, here's your chance. Show us what you got. You know, we're going to be giving you an opportunity to play a lot. Show us that you belong on the opening night roster. I think he's going to get every opportunity tonight. Another guy that we haven't spoken about as much, but it's an important thing to consider, is Jared Tenorti. We were just watching him walk around yesterday in front of us, just noticing how big he is. He's a large man.
And by the way, he will, a little preview, he will be our postgame guest in Jack Daniel's Barrel House tonight.
Good. Oh,
cool.
Yeah. He is a large man.
He's a good guy, and from what I'm told, he had a very good year in Milwaukee last year. He was extremely popular as a team guy. Another thing that he brings to the table that people may or may not know is he's got the ability to drop the gloves. He's not just a big guy who plays physical, but he's also that he can drop them. And if you look at the lineup right now, they don't have a Cody McLeod on the roster. They don't even have a disturber like Zach Rinaldo on the roster, right? So that element, that ingredient, is nice to have. He brings it more than anybody else on the bubble right now. So that's something to consider. I think he would have entered camp as a guy who was a bit of an underdog to make the roster, but from what I'm told, he has played very, very well, and so he's a guy to watch tonight. He's going to be in there.
And they need a player like that because it seems like the past few years they've gotten to a point in the season where they don't have that, and they didn't have anybody in the organization to call up. So they make a move, you know, bringing Cody McLeod back because Zach Ronaldo was hurt. They bring Cody McLeod back last year. They traded for him the first time, you know, a few years ago. So I think having somebody like that, even though if he doesn't make the team for opening night, you at least have him in Milwaukee that you can call him up in case you need him.
Right, and you'd have to pass him through waivers to do it. But let's just take, for example, St. Louis, right? The game has gone away from toughness, intimidation, size. It's a faster game. It's a skilled game. It's a younger game. But St. Louis and Boston, the teams that went all the way last year to the finals in Game 7, they definitely showed that, that ingredient is still a good ingredient. If you don't sacrifice your team's speed and skill, if you have enough skill and those guys can skate, that element can certainly be a factor. And St. Louis just acquired another guy. He's not a big guy, but Justin Falk is tough.
Yeah.
You know, so St. Louis is going to come at you with a very rugged lineup just like they always have. You know, their coach is kind of like that. So to combat that, it helps to have a little bit of that in your lineup.
We'll come back with more here live from Pete and Terry's Tavern, next door to Bridgestone Arena. Tonight, Predators and Carolina Hurricanes, as you just heard, final home preseason game, 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tim Hasselbeck, his weekly chat with us coming up at high noon. Chris Mason, Willie's partner in the booth, as you heard, they will be in the booth tonight, and he will join us at 1 o'clock. I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. And they know a lot of you men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is front and center on that quest. He's the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne Lodge, is the registered nurse. And their experienced staff want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And who doesn't want that as we all get older? Cool Springs MD services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area with, listen to this, improving your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle than right now. What are you waiting for? Pick up the phone and dial this number. Make that appointment like I have. 615-660-6900. That's 660-6900. Or you could always go to their website for everything about them. CoolSpringsMD.com. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Mike Vrabel talking about Kevin Pomphil is still out dealing with an injury, and hinted again about Nate Davis may see him on Sunday. This Kevin Pomphil thing is, I don't know how much longer you can.
Is he on a milk carton?
I mean,
he's hurt.
My goodness.
He's hurt. Can't play.
At this point,
what are you going
to
do?
If he's Nate hurt. Davis is ready to go, I say do that. That's one thing Joe Rexroad, we were talking about, that he doesn't know if Jamil Douglas should play again with the performance that he has had. Did I see that? Was it Pro Football Focus or one of the, maybe it was Football Outsiders, gave him a rating of a 12 and everybody else, you know, was in like the 70s?
I think it was pretty obvious that that he struggled. What was interesting to me, and this goes back to eye test versus you know, the grades that you see in analytics. Calvin from our staff, yeah, who you do the Sunday morning, yep, show with, the early bird show.
Yes,
he came out with some stats from ESPN, and he had the grades of the pass blocking. I showed you guys this yesterday, right? The Browns were number 3, and the Titans were number 4 in percentage of pass blocking success rate. And I'm just saying to myself, there's no way that that matches up. And so what his conclusion was, one way you could look at it is that if that's the case, then it's more on the quarterback to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
Right? And so Mariota deserves some of the responsibility for why he's getting sacked and pressured, but that didn't match up with my eye test.
No.
And I think any Browns fan would sit there and go, are you kidding me? Number 3? Yeah, I mean, their offensive line is having all kinds of trouble, too.
Their line has struggled.
So it just, you know, analytics are great. You know, I'm a big fan of those. And the key is, you know, what are the coaches make of that, right? Are they, when they grade the film, what are they seeing? Are they seeing that the line is doing better than it appears? I mean, you can't tell me that Douglas did well, but, you know, the Conklins, the rest of the line, you know, it's just an interesting stat that came across that caught my attention.
Because those are two teams you would not identify as
getting good offensive line play right now. If you told me those were the bottom five, I would have said, yeah, that makes sense.
Who were the two at the top? Do you remember?
I'm pulling it up here.
Because they were 3 and 4, right? If I remember correctly.
They were 3 and 4. I've got to find the tweet.
Do the scroll.
I'm doing the scroll. We need some scroll music. Remember Dave Letterman would have page-turning music for Paul Schaefer. Maybe I just need to find Calvin's.
By the way, the Atlanta Falcons, have you seen their record, their last 11 games against the AFC?
I have, against the spread.
And against the spread, which should get your attention there.
Yeah, no, I've seen this.
What is it?
0-11.
0-11. I'm going to say that's not good.
No.
Just quick observation. Not good.
Stats like that scare me, though.
Why would it scare you?
Just because it's the way my mind works. I see that and I go, "Oh, well, they're going to win one eventually. They're going to get off the schneid." So, but yeah, I would play the numbers there. 0-11, pretty good. Before you guys get up here.
But what does it really mean? I've always wondered, like a trend. Does that really mean the 12th game? Like the law of averages would tell me that they're due to win one. That's where I would, as the pescimist, get scared about that.
That's what I've tried to tell you guys. Vegas doesn't look at the law of averages like it's bound to break. That's what they use as a gauge of, okay, well, it's like, you know, we keep saying, well, they're bound to beat the Colts sometime. Well, guess what? 2 weeks ago, it didn't happen. Again.
Yeah.
That's 3 for 18.
But we're talking about
in the last 21
conference.
Times, it's like you keep going, well, at some point, I mean, they're going to beat the Colts. But 18 times out of 21, they didn't.
Right.
That's what Vegas is going on. They're looking at these numbers. They don't look at it. Well, you know, that streaks are meant to be broken, so let's adjust the line.
But it's not against a particular team. A team could be matchups, right? You're matching up well with that particular team. An entire conference, you have all kinds of teams in there. So I think that's more coincidence. That's like saying we lost all the Tuesday night games last year. So should I bet against them on Tuesday? Philosophically, I don't think that has any merit to me. I get how people get sucked into that. Oh, they're 0-11. Oh, that means the Titans are going to win. I don't think it means anything in this game. How the Falcons have done against the AFC. That's weird. That's just an odd stat.
Willie, I'm with you. Games. It's not like there's an AFC style of football that they're having trouble with. It's a pure coincidence.
No. Right, but it just means that for whatever reason that none of us can explain, the Falcons have not fared well against AFC teams, or at least against the spread.
Well, okay, last year the Predators lost how many consecutive Saturday night home games, right? Is that any different? That was just coincidental, right? It's like they didn't prepare differently, play differently on Saturday night. I don't see how the Falcons play differently because you think the AFC stat
you're supposed to be able to put your finger on something and why something is happening?
I'm just saying you have to decide what significance does it have. I say it has no significance.
Right.
Because for some people, I realize people bet with stuff like that, with trends and stuff. To me, I don't put any stock in that.
Right. It's like saying, well, Kentucky has lost to Florida 30 consecutive years. It's been different coaches, different players. So that makes no sense.
But the last five do. I think the last two or three.
Yes, it makes no
sense.
But the stat is telling you when Florida and Kentucky play in football, Florida wins. It doesn't matter who's the coach. It doesn't matter who's the players. It's telling you the trend is that we can't explain. They always lose to Florida.
Now, that's a little different.
In a weird fashion.
I think you assess each one, though. That tells me there's some mental baggage there. To me, that's real. Like, oh, my gosh, we'd never beat them. So when the game's close late, like it was in Lexington, are some people in the stands going, oh, boy, here we go again?
Well,
I think
was.
That's real.
I was.
I think that's real. I think the last two or three matchups, you can look at how the teams matched up. Some of those matchups still probably exist. I think that's more significant than a conference. AFC versus NFC.
I'm confused and perplexed by you guys acting like what stat do we ever have put a finger on and know why it's happening? I mean, that does
That's what I'm trying to explain. Obviously, yeah, I'm not explaining it clear enough.
I think in this situation, in a betting stat, because that's what this is, you can't explain it. It's a trend. It is what it is. But then there are certain stats that, like a player stat, that, you know, Marcus is not very good against a certain cornerback. Okay, you can explain that because that cornerback has his number and picks him off.
I mean, what's different than us going, oh, when running backs get to 30, it's over? Well, that's not true. I mean, Adrian Peterson's running just fine. I mean, there have been other quarterbacks that run past 30, no problem. But we always, it's when you start going downhill and we just all come to the conclusion at 30 years old, you're done as a running back.
Well, most
are. That's not true, though. But most some are. Don't. A lot
right,
don't.
There are exceptions.
Don't.
There are exceptions.
Right. That's what I'm
saying.
There are
freaks of nature that don't go with what most
that's
happens.
What I'm saying.
That's
the
still
point is you don't
assess.
You can't make logic of why things
right.
happen.
But I'm saying that there's a range of how significant each stat is.
And significant in your mind.
Yeah,
in your mind.
We each and all
right.
minds have
it's
to
your
assess
mind.
That significance.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, though. Based on that stat, 0-11 against the spread against AFC teams.
Is it always straight up or against the spread? Or both?
Against the spread. It's all against the spread is this stat.
Which the Falcons are a 5.5-point favorite.
I'm seeing 4 now.
Is it dropped down to 4?
According to Vegas Insider, it's at 4. That's
wow.
I'll check some other books. Here in a minute. But my point is...
Sports books.
Yeah, sports
Not
books.
Not books. Yeah, sports books.
We'll do some research. My point is, even based on that stat, it would be irrational for me to say, okay, based on them being 0-11, take the Titans. Titans are going to cover, no matter what. That's what I meant. Like, eventually, they're both pretty evenly matched right now. Eventually, Atlanta's going to get out of that. I'm not saying it's going to be this weekend. I'm saying you could play the numbers, but I'm not going to say it's a lock that the Titans are going to cover.
Well, there is no such thing as a lock.
No, they really don't exist.
No. I mean, in your mind, you
Some
could,
people will tell you.
Right. And that's what I said. In people's minds.
Some people have called them bookets
they
in
can,
the past.
They can. Right. And how did that work out?
Yeah, well,
so, you know.
Ask my underdogs team because I inherited that one.
you inherited a franchise that. Love to say that there were locks or bookets.
Yes.
And guess what? We learned that they weren't locks or bookets.
No.
All right. I have all I would love to get back into the offensive line thing because I have all the
Let's
numbers now.
Okay.
I was in transition. Uh-huh. When we started this, I was getting all my stuff together, transitioning out of morning skate into. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a really interesting because it, in our theme of what significance do you put into this, it's also, I think, noteworthy to see how the different analytic people, like ESPN has their own like analytics department now. You have Pro Football Focus that's been around for a while. Football Outsiders that I like to refer. They all have different ways of measuring things. And an offensive line, I think we would all agree, is kind of hard sometimes to it's a little bit tricky to really put down on paper an exact grade. You might give a grade one way. I might grade another. There's contrast, right?
Yeah.
So the stat we've already referenced.
Kind of like teachers we had in school.
Top 10, yeah. Top 10 pass block win rate.
You could turn in the same exact report to one teacher and give you an A, and the same exact report to another teacher and give you a B, and the same exact report to another teacher and they'll give you a C. I mean, right? That's the beauty of
and
it.
And then I always loved the teacher that grades on a curve, and
yes!
like everybody gets a C.
Yes,
then wave.
I love yeah, those. Man, are my favorite.
And
let's curve it up a little bit
for those of us that sucked at math and still suck at math for showing your work. Oh, I was all about that partial credit.
Yeah,
all about that partial credit. And there were some math teachers that it was all or nothing.
That's right.
I liked the ones that gave the partial credit. Mm-hmm. That's how I passed.
We on this show admit that we appreciated teachers who gave partial credit,
well,
graded on a curve.
Smarty pants over
extra
here.
Extra bonus points for putting your name down.
Yes. Bring an apple to class, bonus points.
Hey, if they're giving.
Sit in the front row, bonus points. Sit in the back row, bonus. I mean, wherever. I would sit wherever for bonus points.
I like sitting in the back, but usually I got moved to the front.
I was sitting in the back, guy.
I was a little chatty.
Didn't like to sit in the front.
I was get separated from your buddy, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was that, too.
Well, and I would.
We had some bad conduct report cards over the years.
I was the kid that would just, like, be in space and be drawing, and the teacher would be like, Chase, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm drawing. Like, I'm just not paying attention.
Hmm. Okay.
That was me.
All right, so we will come back, and you want to...
I got some numbers.
Expound on this a little bit
more? I got some numbers to throw at you, and you tell me what you think the most accurate numbers are to our eye test of the Titans' offensive line.
All right, okay. We will either try to catch Willie's numbers or duck and get out of the way of him throwing numbers at us. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Tonight, final home game of the preseason. Predators and Carolina Hurricanes, same two teams in Raleigh on Friday night to close out the preseason. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here. Don't forget, they've got specials at Pete and Terry's Tavern. They opened up, and we've got people taking in some lunch. They've got a $12.50 burger and brew all day. Happy hour from 3 until 6, $5 domestic draft, $6 craft draft, and $7 specialty cocktail, all here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Now, you've got some numbers you want to throw at us.
Get the number.
So get your arm ready.
Titans offensive line. And Calvin Smith from our staff was the one that put this up where I noticed it, but there is a department, ESPN Analytics, and they have all the different things where they grade out the performance of NFL teams. And they have, so far, the top 10 pass block win rate. Pass block win rate. And number one in the league is the Green Bay Packers, 71%. And it doesn't really have an explanation of detail of what this means. I'm guessing this means as a line, as a unit, I would take that to mean 71% of the time they win. In other words, they get the job done, I guess, in protecting their quarterback. I would love to know more about what this means because I think we're all confused as to why the Titans rank number 4 in the league at 65%. It's the Packers at 71, the Cowboys at 69%, then the Browns at 66%, and the Titans 65%. Those are the top 4. So immediately I was thinking, now Calvin... His interpretation is, well, that could mean that the line is doing better than it appears and the quarterback's got to get rid of the ball, right?
Okay.
And that can make sense. That's a plausible theory. Now, you go to Football Outsiders. They have the evaluation of offensive lines, and they break it down into run blocking and pass protection. In the run blocking, the Tennessee Titans are reasonably successful. They grade out well. They are overall ranked 13th in efficiency in run blocking. But this is more, it lines up with our eye test. They are dead last in pass protection. The way they do it is they adjust the sack rate. They take the number of sacks you have, and they also factor in how many times are you dropping back. Like if you only drop back 20 times and you're sacked 5 times, that's different than dropping back 40 times and being sacked 5 times. So based on the number of times they've dropped back, they've allowed the most sacks. We have already known that, but it's way back there. They're 4% worse than anybody else in the league, 4% worse than even the team number 31, which is Miami. So that makes more sense of what we're seeing. So I guess what do we make of this ESPN stat? Do we think it's just a bunch of hooey-fooey, or do you believe the Mariota –
well,
responsibility part of this.
So tell me, because you understand this stuff a lot better than I do, so tell me if this is an accurate analysis of this. I think so we should be blaming Marcus more than the line because of
according to ESPN.
According to ESPN.
Part of what I'm pointing out is different analytics view it differently. It's not all analytics do not agree, let's say.
But doesn't
Pro Football Focus has got a different way of calculating this kind of stuff.
But doesn't that match up with the whole theory of that we've been talking about with Marcus and that? And I'm not trying to blame him for everything.
Well, but I do think he shares in some of the responsibility into why a quarterback is sacked or pressured. Right? I think there have been times, to be fair. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of examples of quarterback is under duress. He doesn't have all day to throw. Unlike there are certain Sundays where you watch a game and nobody can ever get to the quarterback. Tom Brady's had plenty of those, right?
Right.
But I think that there are questions sometimes of, okay, you don't have all day. Do you get the ball out when you should? Do you throw it away when you should? Is there a guy open in the flat that you have a chance to release the ball to that you miss? Or can you buy that extra second? Keep the ball in throwing position. I've noticed sometimes, this is just my viewing, this has not got anything to do with analytics, but this could fall into the ESPN pass block theory. I do think there are times where Mariota, as he knows he has to adjust his position, doesn't keep the ball in a throwing position. He brings it down, drops his shoulders, drops his head, as if he's going to run.
That's the scrambler.
And instead of maybe shuffling and keeping the ball up so that if he does see somebody, it's in a position to where he can toss it over there. Whereas if he's got the ball down by his waist with two hands, as he drops his shoulders, he's just not in any kind of throwing position. He's committed to running. And a lot of times he hasn't been able to burst through that line and get into the second level or start going laterally along the line to look for a receiver. So it is the classic combination of both. I think Mariota can do better. Obviously, the line can do a lot better.
And look, again, so this, I'm not putting it all on
him. The 65% ranked fourth, that just doesn't match up to my eye test at all.
Yeah.
That has to shock everybody, right?
It shocks me. I think it goes into something that Darren pointed out, you know, a long time ago about you look at a quarterback like Tom Brady having the sidestep, and that buys him more time in the pocket. That's something that I think Marcus has struggled with. Even though he's a mobile quarterback, that's how he gets out of it. He runs, you know, outside the pocket, and he's able to scramble. But it's standing inside the pocket and being able to move around and have that mobility that he has struggled with.
I don't think it's really the sidestep with Mariota that concerns me the most. I think in year five, what concerns me the most is those top-tier quarterbacks, the ones that have the sidestep, the reason they have a sidestep, Chase, is because they have pocket awareness. They understand.
Right. And he doesn't have
That's what concerns me the most. You can't teach that. You can't make that happen. Either you get that or not. It's all about reading defenses. The great quarterbacks, the elite quarterbacks in the league, are always one step ahead of the defense. Russell Wilson, those guys, they anticipate what's coming. And I'm not sure if Mariota anticipates what's coming, if he sees what's coming. Those guys see the field. They know what's coming. In fact, it's times if you've talked to either current or, I guess, better is former players that are willing to talk about this stuff, they will tell you it's frustrating as a defensive player because you think you've got a lock-in on this particular play or this quarterback, and you realize they just screamed out to everybody, they know exactly what you're about to do. And they're like, how in the world did they know what we were about to do? And I don't think Mariota possesses that. I don't think he has the awareness around him. And it's not just him. There's a lot of guys that are in this category. We're talking about
it's a
small
hard position. There's
group
only,
up at the top
who have that
just
ability.
Has that ability to do that, and I don't think he does.
What one more batch of stats, right, from the analytics department. John Glennon likes to share some things he sees from the Pro Football Focus. Now, what they do at Pro Football Focus, they grade every player, right? They don't say offensive line, here's your grade. I guess they do, but they also break it down person by person. So it's interesting. This is what John puts out there. The team lead in the offensive line. And see, I think this is tricky because I think there are times where, Chase, you're playing guard, Darren's playing center, I'm playing tackle. We might have, you know, it's hard for the person grading the film to know what's supposed to happen on a play. Was I supposed to help Darren or was I supposed to help you?
Right.
You give up a sack, but I didn't do my job because I was supposed to double team the guy you were blocking and the sack goes on you.
right? That's what the guy grading the tape doesn't always have full understanding of what the play is supposed to do.
Coverage was or the
but that being
protection.
Said, the leaders on the team in quarterback pressures allowed. Jamil Douglas, 7 so far. Tied Roger Saffold with 7. Now, that would be a little bit surprising, right, that Saffold would have the same amount allowed as
Douglas.
Yep. This is just food for thought. That because I think people have asked this question. Is Saffold playing as well as they hoped he would, or is he still trying to figure out the chemistry?
I don't know how they could answer that yes. I mean, I think there has to be a little bit of a level of disappointment to him to this point. That's 3 games.
I think
but for the level of money that he's getting and the accolades that he brought in and being the most sought-after guard out there, then I think they would have to admit that he has not looked to the level that they thought he would look to this point.
And I think what you're going to see is he probably plays better when Luan gets back, which concerns me because you pay him all that money.
And
he played next to Andrew Whitworth in L.A., so I think that helped him get paid. And look, I get it. You have to play as a unit, but at the same time, if you're going to pay him all that money, he needs to perform.
We come back to close out the second hour. We've been telling you this week that don't be surprised if some Tennessee players transfer and head to the portal because this is the week to do it. Well, it looks like they have. And also, there's some news in the league, in the NHL, around the Seattle franchise. They have hired a pro scout. And you're like, what's the news on that front? Well, we'll tell you why that's newsworthy. Because it's a first. On the other side, to close out the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tim Hasselbeck coming up at high noon here on Darren Donick and Chase. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern today. It's going to be our new home on Predators home games, so we're excited about that. We've been telling you for the last couple of days, don't be surprised. We saw the story with Houston quarterback Keene, who decided that he was going to redshirt this season, a guy that has put up monster stats for the Cougars. And we saw this a lot last year after recording 4 games because the rule allows you to shut down 4 games or less and preserve a year, and a lot of college players are doing that. And we said, don't be surprised if some Tennessee players don't do that. And indeed, it looks like inside linebacker Shannon Reed and wide receiver Jacquez Jones both have entered into the transfer portal, and linebacker Will Ignat has not been spotted at practice this week.
Really?
Yes. Has been absent from practice, and so a lot of people are speculating that he may be another one that may be headed that direction. Now, Jacquez Jones is a redshirt sophomore. He had his first action ever at UT in the BYU game, which was a 9-yard carry. Didn't play at all last year as a redshirt freshman. Didn't play his freshman year. He had an injury, but a guy that virtually has not seen the field. Now, Shannon Reed, on the other hand, is a junior, had a career high in tackles. He had 7 against Chattanooga. And last year as a sophomore, played in 9 games as a reserve linebacker and played a lot of special teams. In 2017 as a freshman, he played in 7 games and had a big stop against Alabama his freshman year, which was interesting. Made his SEC debut against South Carolina. So a guy that obviously has been on the field much, much more. But there you go. 2 guys who said, don't be surprised. And I think there's a couple more. Like I said, there's already hints of a couple more. So this is the week for that to happen. And indeed, it has started to happen. Things just continue to not look good for Jeremy Pruitt and this program moving forward. It's not a good sign.
No.
I mean, we knew that from the Georgia State game. It's like, how can you come out and look flat in the first game? How can you come out and look like a team that's not motivated in the first game of the season at home? How can you come out and get outplayed by Georgia State at home in the second half in the first game of the season? So there were and so the concerns just continue to grow.
I think that you should definitely read something into this, that there are players transferring out of the program. Now, these two individuals, you know, haven't seen a lot of playing time, so you kind of expect that. You expect players like that that, hey, I should be playing more. I'm going to go look elsewhere. I think what's going to be telling, if you get someone at some point that has been a significant member of this team, say, whether it's during the season or at the end of the season, say, you know what, I'm out. I can't do this anymore. That is when you're going to really start to see that this is already a clear message that there's something going on, that there are problems. But you know what I mean? Like, if there's somebody that has had significant minutes and all of a sudden they're going to leave, then that should really tell you something. Yeah. And I think it's going to trend that way. I would not be shocked. And, you know, it could be the quarterback at the end of the season. Garantano could say, hey, I'm going to be a grad transfer. I'm out. I'm going somewhere else.
For me, what I look at is this is a roster right now for Tennessee where there should be a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
And for people to not think that they fit into the plans, either they were overrated as recruits or haven't panned out and don't belong at that level, or these are good players that just don't like being there. It's like, you shouldn't be losing. It's one thing for Alabama to be losing players off of a very deep roster where guys are just saying, you know what, it's not going to happen for me here. I love being
right
here. It's a good team. I like winning, but I just don't like sitting out.
Yeah.
And I have two All-Americans in front of me at my position. I've got to go somewhere else. At Tennessee, there's a lot of opportunities to play, right? They're looking for guys to go out there and do the job. So that troubles me a little bit if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, that these guys don't want to stick it out. Because it could be a young player that just wait a year, and there should be something that opens up, right? You're not behind 2-3 deep on a depth chart right now. So
I couldn't agree more.
I don't know how to interpret it. I'm from afar. I don't know at all the individual situations of these guys. But it doesn't look good for a thin roster to be losing guys.
Yep. I mentioned that, you know, the new franchise in Seattle, they're making news, even though they haven't started up. They haven't done anything yet. But they have actually hired a scout. And you're like, okay, don't they have a lot of other things to do before there's news about a scout? Well, yeah, they do. Like, they got to come up with a name and everything. They got a long ways to go, but the reason it's getting attention is because this scout is a first in the league.
Okay.
You have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, but you're going
to
tell us.
You're talking about you're switching to hockey now.
Yep.
The Seattle expansion franchise.
Yeah, the Seattle fill in the blank.
Yeah, whatever they're going to be.
Cammy Granato is their scout.
Oh, good.
First female scout in the NHL.
And if you were going to start naming names of candidates.
She was the captain of the 98 U.S. Olympic team.
A very decorated
history.
In fact, she has been, I'm trying to think, Pete would help us on this, but has she not been like her brother Tony, I know, has been an assistant coach. I'm trying to think of what her highest role has been. Has she not been maybe a development coach or an assistant coach at some point? So, good for her. Not surprising at all to hear that.
Her Very husband cool. is Ray Ferraro.
Yes.
But Seattle is expected to play in the 2021-22 season. But good for Cammy Granato, who becomes the NHL's first female pro scout, and she will be with the new Seattle franchise. So I wanted to pass that along. Pretty cool,
cool
stuff.
Good nugget.
We will come back and kick off the third hour with our buddy Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. We'll get into some NFL stuff with him. That'll all be next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.